Welcome to Burrows and Burbs with hosts John Engel and Roberto Cabrera. Over the next hour, you're going to learn some insider knowledge that will help you overcome and strategize in the cutthroat world of real estate. Now, here are your hosts, John and Roberto.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, Burrows and Burbs, episode 121, season 4. Very excited. I'm your host, John Engel, from New Canaan, Connecticut. And that is my co-host.
I'm Roberto Cabrera. I'm with Brown Harris Stevens, and I am in Manhattan.
East side, west side?
West side, upper west side.
Upper west side, all right. And today we have two co-authors and experts in coaching and in real estate in particular. Jerry Udelson and Ken Tutungian. Did I get that right?
Perfect. You get a prize at the end of this.
All right. I'm going to hit share screen and show you. This is the book. Came out in 2018. Very excited. If you want to know more about Jerry, she's a master certified coach. And I guess that's what inspired the book. Ken is a sales associate at Coldwell Banker and a manager there for the last 22 years. They authored this book, and here they are in Boston at a book signing party. I just took I really enjoyed this website with everybody holding up the book, so I thought I'd share that with you.
That's great.
But before we begin, I just want to thank Grace Farms. You'll find them at gracefarms.org. This is the 80-acre campus. This is the river building in the snow. I want you to all go check out gracefarms.org and find out about what they're doing in the Design for Freedom initiative. And I'd like you to support them at gracefarmsfood.com, where you can buy their coffees and teas. And now their partnership with Greystone Bakery for brownies. You can give this in this attractive box the way I do as a closing gift. And without further ado, I'd like to hand the mic over to Jerry and tell us about the book. Tell us what inspired the book and what it's all about. Beyond the Sale, Life You Love.
Beyond the Sale, How to Create a Great Business and a Life You Love. Thanks, John. I've been a business coach for many, many years. I used to be a real estate broker in Cambridge, Mass. And I also have a degree in public health administration from a school in Connecticut. And I've been helping people for a long time figure out what they want and how to get there. And I've particularly narrowed in on entrepreneurs and especially real estate agents, because people come to me with how the heck they're going to grow their business, or should I leave, or I have issues with my team, or I'm thinking about going off on my own, what should I do, whatever. So I've known Ken for a while because I was a coach to a lot of top producers at the precursor to Coldwell Banker years ago, and I met Ken through that. And I wanted to write a book, and so we decided we would do it together. So the book, it takes people through exercises focusing on what do you want to create in your life? Specifically at the beginning, what do you want to create in your business? And what are your goals and how are you going to get there? And then there's chapters at the end about what do you want to create in your life in general in terms of relationships, travel, creativity, health, and other domains that are really important. So I think our philosophy is that you should grow your business by doing what you love, and you also should have a life you love, which includes things beyond real estate. So I'll let Ken.
So it's not just about productivity, and it's not just about the numbers. It's about a little bit about the work-life balance and setting the right goals up front.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. There was a quote that I used with a client once, like, what's the point of making another $100,000 if you have no one to cuddle with? Now, some of us don't care about having someone to cuddle with, but some of us do, but it may be easier. For some of my clients, it was easier to create a fabulous business than it was to have a partner. So I think that you can do both.
So can I ask one question? So what prompted you to write, I wrote a book, shockingly, I wrote a book called Apple Pie, The Real Ingredients to Getting Your Own Slice, which was about in Manhattan, everybody kept asking the same questions about co-ops and the process and the interviews and this and that. And I saw a need. I was like, no one knows this information. Like no one, especially the people who don't come from here. So I saw this need to do this and I did it. Did you see a lot of unhappy brokers? Is that what happened? People that didn't know how to manage?
We saw a lot of brokers that had, there was no balance. It was out of balance. I would have agents who are making all kinds of money come into my office and literally cry. So upset. I have no life. This is all I do is real estate. And I know Jerry had similar situations and similar stories and people that we've coached. And it would break my heart. Could you try to get someone off from what was super familiar to them to somebody that maybe wasn't so familiar? And that's the hardest, to move that dial. And that was really the impetus of the book. And we had a lot of fun writing it because we exchanged, like I brought up so many stories from the last 20 plus years of instances and people and events that have shaped some of the dialogue in the book. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we saw a big need.
I wanted to ask you on in January, because this is the point in the year where we're all writing our business plans, or we're feeling guilty because we haven't written our business plan. And maybe we're purposely not writing a business plan because we don't want to fail at the business plan. If you ask me my business plan and I tell you I'm going to double my salary this year, and then you say, oh, yeah. And how are you going to do that? Oh, I've got a plan here on how I'm going to make twice as much money. And how's that going? Have you made the changes in your life that you need to do that? Oh, well, you know, no, but I'm hopeful. So there's a lot of anxiety around the writing of the plan, setting of the goals, the writing of the plan. What's a realistic goal? And am I willing to change the behaviors in order to affect some of that change? So let's at least start with the setting of goals and the setting of a plan in January. And what perspective or advice can you give us about how to get through January?
For about 20 plus years, I have my opening line. A business coach did this for me. What are the 5 things you want to accomplish this year? And I thought that was an easy question until you really think about the 5 important things, and one of them can be personal. And a lot of people have trouble with that because it's from there that the goals, once you have your focus on what it is you want to do, then we draw the map and how you're going to get there. I did this with one of my top agents the other day, and he said, I was dissatisfied with my income. So I said, what are your 5 things that you want to do? And he said, the same as last year, but only more of them. So that kind of stumped me, only more. I said, okay, but now we're set up a tracker between the two of us so that I know on pretty much a weekly basis what he's doing. And when we meet every other week, we have a basis for that. And it's those five points. Mm-hmm. And in January, in June, I come back and I reestablish those 5 points. So that's kind of how we do it.
That's a really good, that was a really good perspective. I think when I work with clients, I do ask them what they want, what their goals are. And I should mention that tomorrow's Quitter's Day. Does anyone know? Quitter's Day is the second Friday in January. It's the day when everybody's quit their resolutions. And truthfully, I found this out from Mel Robbins, who's a big podcaster. 80% of Americans who make New Year's resolutions abandon them by tomorrow. So I think one of the reasons is that people create goals or resolutions or objectives or plans or whatever you want to call it. They just create things and they pull them out of thin air because they sound like good ideas, but they really don't want them, or they really pick strategies that aren't anything they're going to follow through with. For example, I personally am not a big fan of cold calling. I know there's an agent in Ken's office who's done spectacularly with cold calling, but most of my clients don't want to do cold calling. So if you put that in your business plan that you're going to, you know, make 5 cold calls a week or a day or whatever it is, then you wake up in the morning and you go, oh my God, I have to do cold calls. I hate cold calls. But if you put things in like, you know, I'm going to have a party, a client appreciation party quarterly. I'm going to take a referral source out to lunch the first Thursday of every month. You have to pick strategies that are actually activities that you're willing to do. And I think people should step out of their comfort zone, which is really hard for some of my clients because they just, you know, we come up with fabulous ideas and they just don't want to do them. So, you know, as a coach, I try to cajole and nudge and support people, but I can't, you know, I can't do it for you. And Ken, as the manager, we can't want it for our clients more or our agents more than they want it for themselves.
Gary, I always say these are your goals, not mine. Make them yours so that they live real for you. And then that way you're going to, like, everyone thinks, oh, I'm going to double my income. Is that really practical? Like, what? Right. It really isn't.
Right. And the other question is, like, why do you want to double your income? Like, like, what, why is this important to you? And they may say, well,
because I got a lot of bills.
Well, that's a motivator. Debt is motivator.
Yeah. But what are you spending your money on, John? And could you be doing something else to give you the same hit of pleasure or the same feeling as, you know, there's this, I'm not pointing at you specifically, but, you know, we go out shopping and women are gatherers, you know, so I have a shopping list and I get really, you know, happy when I find the stuff on the list. And it could be something really stupid, like, you know, a new charger for the phone, or it could be something, you know, like a piece of jewelry, or I got a new car this year, you know, but material things don't necessarily bring you the same kind of happiness as experiences and connection, which we could talk about later. Cause I'm also a student of the science of well-being from Lori Santos at Yale. And so I have taught workshops about that. But anyway, so if you ask somebody, like, why do you want to double your income? And they say, well, because I want to buy a second house, or I want to, you know, take my whole family, extended family to Europe. So whatever it is, that's a fabulous goal. And you may not need to double your income to do that. But sometimes what you're looking for cannot be achieved by money. You know, it's like.
Okay. You know, it strikes me as something that Ken's just alluded to, is that some of these people who really need some of this are highly successful. Like, they're doing a lot of business, mm-hmm. yet their lives are so imbalanced that they're unhappy. Is that
or
right?
they fill the void like alcoholics fill or bulimics fill it with food or drink or drugs. They fill the void with work. You know, they're workaholics. And then they don't have any time to think about how lonely they are. And they come home to an empty apartment or condo or whatever, and there's like nobody there, which is fine. You know, people are single, and, you know, I was single for a long time. It's, you know, it's a great lifestyle. But if you're missing something, you should go after what it is that you're missing, as opposed to putting more energy in something that's not going to bring you what it is you want.
Let's talk more about this goal setting, and how do I know whether I'm setting a realistic goal or an unrealistic goal? And so we've already sort of pinned it down in a couple ways. You said, start with 5 and make one of them personal. Mm-hmm. And we've also said, don't just say flippantly, I want to double my income. But let's say that, you know, I want to double my income, you know, is my first goal. It begs the question, is that a realistic goal?
It should be.
And what's not?
It should be somewhat of a stretch. I interrupted. It should be somewhat of a stretch. But for example, don't put, I want to climb Mount Kilimanjaro if you've never, you know, if you've never climbed Mount Washington or something, you know, don't have it be so crazy. Like, I'm going to spend my life, I'm going to become an Olympian at age 50 or something. You know, it has to be something that's achievable, but I think it should be somewhat of a stretch. And I was working with a client years ago, and I remember being in their conference room at their office, and the person put down a goal of, I think it was $700,000. I said, what's your goal? And the person said $700,000. And I said, well, and I knew a lot about this person. I said, well, what about a million? And the person like totally, you know, was startled and freaked out. And I think within a year or two, that person got to the $1 million mark because I knew their capability. But if you're a first year agent, you know, and you're just starting out and you have no background in sales, then come up with something that's somewhat achievable because you really don't want to be totally disappointed. But if you set a goal of, say, $350,000 and last year you made $275,000 and you only make $300,000, that's a win.
Can you give me some examples, you or Ken, of some of the best goals that you've heard from some of these people you've coached where you said, oh, that's a really good goal. And you know, write that down, you know, keep that
in mind. I have one I can share.
Okay.
We're going to save his name, but he had accumulated $65,000 in debt by buying a new car. Why he ever did it, I don't know, but he did. And we have spent the last year him figuring out what he needs to do in order to buy that debt down. And as of last week, he is debt free.
Wow.
The most gratifying, but he did his real estate full time and worked a bar. And he, to his credit, I just saw him. He's having an event party and a client event thing tonight. And he has 85 people coming and he's like on top of the world because he has those rocks off his back. But I always say there's always June. And people say, what do you mean? I said, that's when we get to renegotiate. So if we're not on target or we want to go beyond the target, there's always June. And that conversation takes a long time to really get to the bottom of why someone thinks that they can double their income. And usually at the end of this, usually a 2-hour session, they're pretty confident in what they can do. And we make some adjustments as necessary.
Yeah. Well, I've had clients where sometimes their goals are, they form over time. And I had a client who was very successful, worked for Coldwell Banker. And they have a referral program at Coldwell Banker, which means that if you have any client that's from Harvard, you have to give the Harvard back, I think it was a huge percent, like 25%. And this, I could be making the figure, but it was a lot of money that they had to give back. And at one point, this client had been referred by 7 of her other clients to another client. And they still wanted a 25% referral because the client was from Harvard. And so I helped her figure out where to go. And she left and went to another real estate company that didn't have referral fees from Harvard. And I said, and then she built a kitchen. She redid the kitchen. And I said, you should call this your referral kitchen or your Harvard referral kitchen, because all the money she would have been giving to Harvard, she gave, you know, she kept. And then finally, she decided to start her own agency and has been extremely successful having a boutique agency, because this was in keeping with her values. But you know, starting out with maybe 3 or 5 years experience, most people do not say they want their own agency. And I don't even think that the client knew at the time that she wanted her own agency, but it was a gradual process over time. And I think that that's how things evolve. Like, you might start out wanting to make X dollars, and then you decide that you want to grow a team. And so then your goal changes, and then you decide you want to exit real estate and become a philanthropist or move to Sonoma, California or something. So I think, you know, that the goal should be what's in your heart now, what's in keeping with your values and what's most important to you. And then goals evolve. You know, I never thought, I live in Santa Fe, New Mexico. I lived in Boston most of my life. I never thought I'd be living here. It was my partner's goal, but you know, here I am.
You blame him for that.
I do.
Some of these goals, I think, lend themselves to easy to measure, right? I want to make twice as much money. I want I want 12, you know, I want to sell 12 houses, one a month. Easier to measure on a week to week, month to month basis. Some of these, though, I think are a little squishier. And so, you know, I wonder, how do we measure? And, you know, and that's part of the reason for my question of what is an appropriate goal? Some of these, if you say, I want to climb Mount Kilimanjaro, as you said, well, halfway through the year, am I closer to the goal? I don't know, because I haven't started the climb. So in some of these goals, I guess, because they're measurable, we can make adjustments. Others, we continue to kid ourselves, I'm going to climb that mountain, but mm-hmm. I never get around to it.
That's a great question, but I think you can have a goal of, I want to be happier.
That's too squishy for me. Well, how do I measure that?
Okay, because when I wake up in the morning, I feel, ugh. And I really want to wake up feeling excited and energized by the day, by my life. And I want to wake up happy in the morning. And as a coach, I would, you know, I would ask you what things make you happy. And it, you know, and I know for a fact, talking about, you know, this course in well-being, that social connection, which also ties into growing your business, but social connection is one of the keys to happiness. And the most important for growing your business are gratitude, giving back, and social connection, being connected to people. And so if I know what some of the measures of happiness are, and I say to you, well, you know, one of the measures of happiness is savoring the moment, getting up in the morning and having, you know, a fabulous cup of coffee, pretend this is coffee, and you actually savor it. Or you savor, my cat comes in and drinks out of my water glass while I'm getting ready for a call or something, you know, and I like can savor the moment, or I'm on the phone call with somebody and it's just fantastic. Or another key to happiness is, you know, exercise. You can certainly measure that. So if you can have something that's squishy, but you can come up with some of the milestones or key points, then you can come up with a plan. And the plan isn't squishy. It's just that the objective is to feel happier or more satisfied or something. You know, you can't have a goal of being in love by the end of 2024 if you're not in a relationship. I mean, you know, but you can take action.
Actually, that's a great point. I have to say that my wife was working at a little ad agency years ago, mm-hmm. and the boss, also a woman, came in one day and with new clothes, and she said, "What's going on?" And she said, "You know what? I've spent all of my energy on my career. One of my goals this year is to finally give my love life a chance. So in order to do that, I bought myself a mink coat. I bought myself the right clothes. I'm going to get out of here at 5 o'clock every day. I'm going to put myself in a position to meet to meet someone. I'm going to go to the gallery crawl. I'm going to go to the museums. I'm going to go to the symphony. I'm going to put myself out there instead of just going home and putting on my pajamas." And sure enough, within 6-9 months, she met her love of her life, and they got married. And I think that she had to specifically say, "I'm going to put myself in a position and give it a chance." Mm-hmm. And so in business, one of the earliest podcasts that Roberto and I ever did was, I think, with Lisa Lippman, one of the most successful agents in New York. And we said, "How do you do it?" And she said, "My success is directly related to the number of doors I go through in a given week." And she said, "You know, I can't tell you whether the business is going to come from talking to the doorman or talking to the UPS man. But I can tell you that it's directly related to my getting out of my office mm-hmm. and connecting with people," which is what you just said. Right. So we're kind of putting the two together, yeah. that connections make me happier. And I think you're suggesting that they make me a better realtor and a happier person.
They make you a happy person. They make you a more successful realtor, and they help you build a great referral base. Because most of my clients, their business is strictly referral based. They do, you know, they may have written, well, they don't write books, but they're, you know, they have a lively social media presence. They do events and stuff, but it's really through the number of people that they have face-to-face connections with. That's why COVID was so awful for people, because especially realtors who are particularly
relationship driven
and also extroverted. A lot of them are extroverted. So when you're stuck in your house and you can't go out to dinner and you can't do things that are fun, then I was telling people you need to get on the phone and call people and talk to people, especially people living alone. And I personally made a huge effort to call everybody I knew that was friends that I knew were single and living alone, because you really want to reach out. So to grow your business and to be happier, social connection. You know, talk to people.
How do I measure that? I'm going to tell you, I'm terrified of putting down on my business plan that I'm just going to go be more social. And suddenly the business, you know, I get that I might be happier. But am I going to tell Pam or Pete on this call, you just got to get out more, you know, and your business will follow.
Well, did you see Ryan Serhant? He was like at Starbucks all the time and talking to pregnant women because they had to move, assuming they had to move to a bigger place. And he joined three gyms and he would go in the, you know, high rent districts, and he would be going to three gyms a day.
Ryan Serhant is an exceptionally charismatic individual who finds it not a problem to talk to everybody, or seems to talk to everybody. That's his gift.
Barry has a crush on him, by the way.
He became that way.
He didn't necessarily start that. Yeah. He did become that way from doing exactly what you're saying through that exercise.
Yeah. No, we got our book on his show because Ken and I were determined. And so there's one of our books when he was sitting at his desk. But but you can wear a hat that has the name of your agency when you go out for runs. And
I'll give you a real life story.
Go ahead.
One of my top agency last year, he made, I don't know, $1.5 million. He goes to Starbucks every day. He sets up court in the morning. He doesn't have to at this point. His business is so good. But that's he has a table at Starbucks that the team at Starbucks put his name on it. And they call it Sean's table. And Sean goes to Starbucks on the same Starbucks. He's like the mayor of Starbucks. Everyone knows him. And the baristas and all the people behind the counter are making referrals to him.
Yeah.
But there are a contingent of people that go to that Starbucks and they're like, that's a guy. He's always in that. There's nowhere to sit. He's always got that table. Guaranteed.
Well, if you know Sean, you'll pull up a chair and you'll get your ear talked off.
So can we talk a little bit about just the arc? We're talking about the goal setting and we're talking about some of the process and getting. But what in the book, when you were approaching this, and I want to write this book, like what's the arc? Because you can't address everybody's circumstances and everybody's situation and everybody's needs. So you have to, in some ways, you have to generalize. So what is the arc of what I would encounter if I'm going to read your book? Like, how do you go through this?
Well, we ask you, it's a lot of self-exploration, Roberto, and we have you. There's a lot of assessments that I really like the Strengths Finder, for example, from Rath, which helps you figure out what your top strengths are. Looking at what you did last year, where was your source of business, et cetera? Who do you know? And then we give you a lot of ideas about, you know, how to ask for, there's a whole chapter, a section on how to ask for referrals, for example. There's a whole section about how can you use your strengths to grow your business. So it's really a lot of exercises. It's not like, it's like the difference between if you buy you buy Ina Garten's cookbook and you put it on the counter and then you still continue to have grilled cheese for dinner. I mean, if you buy the book and you just put it by the nightstand and don't do the exercises, there's no value. But this is structured so that if you do the exercises and answer the questions and really think about who you know, who's brought you business, what do you love to do, what are you willing to do, and you put that down. At the end, you come up with a blueprint for success, which is you know, a bunch of questions that lead you to goals personally and also business goals.
It also challenges your values. Knowing who you are and what's important to you, and basically getting down to finding your purpose. Mm-hmm. And when I did this with someone, I didn't realize that they were having some issues with his family, mom and dad, and there was financial issues. And this guy came clean to me and he said, you know, I have to support my family. That's why I'm here. That's why I'm so, you know, and it was like there was a moment of tears, that it was so emotional and deep and personal. And if, as coaches, if we can get to that point and get that raw truth out of someone, then that's like rocket fuel to propel them to what it is that they want. And you have to keep tapping into that. There's a book that I read that I turned Jerry on to. It's called The Motivated Brain. And it's a great book, and talks about finding your purpose and what your purpose means. And we quote the book in Beyond, and it's really very valuable. I met the author, gave her a ride home one night after a lecture at MIT, and didn't realize that this book would be so important in my life. So you know, you might want to figure that out as well and pick up that book. There's two of them. And this is a book. It's a brown covered book, and the woman is Danish. I can't remember her name, but it's a very specific sounding name. And yeah, that's what we do. You got to get real as business coaches, as team leaders. You have to spend the time in order to make sure that your team or that you are working with a coach who actually gets to the root of what it is that's going to motivate you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, once you get there, guys, it's, as I say, it's rocket fuel.
How do I pick a coach? How do I evaluate a coach? I have a coach. I know Pam's been on the screen a moment ago. She has a coach. We compare notes about what she's getting out of her coaching sessions. How do I pick a coach? How do I know if I'm getting good value?
Firstly, I wouldn't pick a coach that is trying to sell me seminars.
Yeah.
Okay. There are a lot of coaches with national coaching companies, and all they want to do is they want you to go to this retreat and that retreat and go to that superstar program and go over there and fly to Austin, Texas, and then go to San Francisco the next month. And that's not the way I would pick a coach. I've always had a coach, and my coaches, and Jerry has been a coach to me over the years. And it's never about an ulterior motive of selling me books, tapes, anything like that, because all of those go into the pile. Very rarely do they get used. But the coach, there was a woman, my God, why am I drawing a blank on Laura's name? Not Laura. A touch of
Cheryl Richardson?
Yeah, Cheryl Richardson. Thank you.
I love Cheryl, yeah.
Yeah, Cheryl was great. I mean, she was one of my first coaches, and you guys should look her up. She's great. She does a lot of work with Oprah. And not name dropping, but she's the real deal. And Cheryl and I remember that one Wednesday morning when she's talking to me about something, and there was the aha moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's her.
Mm-hmm.
She's great.
Live a soul-directed life.
Yeah. I want to jump in here, because I'm Master Coach certified by the International Coach Federation, and I'm not a sales trainer. And people have bandied the term coach around a lot, which started in sports. And now they're potty training coaches and cooking coaches and, you know, all these people who are real estate coaches, and none of them have had any training. They've just really, you know, find and replace the term sales into coaching. And so they really don't know any of the they don't really know how to be a coach. The thing about being a coach is that you try to ask great questions, navigating through curiosity.
I thought that we call that a podcaster, but go on.
Okay. Well, yeah. Yeah. Well, our goals are slightly different, but yeah, that's true. You do navigate, obviously, John, and you're doing a great job. But We ask a lot of questions and we allow the client to come up with their own solutions for the most part. Now I do offer advice. If I know the answer to something, I'm not going to have the client go look for it. Or if I have resources, I'll say, you know, have you tried this? Like I have clients looking for trying to redo their website. So, you know, I'll give them information that I know and resources. They make a decision. But I'm not selling stuff. I mean, if people hire me, I send them a copy of the book. You know, I'm not selling the book to my clients. But it's about developing a relationship over time and holding the space for the client to really reflect and come up with answers on their own. So it's not like you need to make 10 calls and you need to do this and this and this. And most of my clients do not want to be held accountable, which is really interesting. I have most of my clients are top producers at their agencies. And so they want someone to help strategize, help prioritize, figure out the easiest and best way to get there, and to remind them what they want when they forget. Because they may be off on a tangent, or they may be like, you know, the next some shiny object is in front of them. And I'll say, you know, didn't you want to do this? Or, you know, I thought you were going to work on your health. And, you know, have you made that appointment yet or whatever?
So a little bit back to what John was saying, though, about how do you find the right coach? How do you, because I can imagine it's like dating. You have to spend some time with people and then you invest time and you're like, that was a waste of time. And then you're off to the next one. And then you met two or three people and they're just like, these people just don't work or they're not get it. They're whatever the case may be. And then, you know, you're like, the heck with it. I'm done.
Well, there's a roster of coaches. There's a gazillion coaches who are certified and trained on the International Coaching Federation website. There's a whole find a coach, verify a coach. Because I'll see coaches, they're famous coaches who work like at Sotheby's and they have no coach training. They're not certified. And they maybe were an athlete or something and they're supposed to be good. But I don't know. I always get coaches from word of mouth, from referrals. And I've used maybe 5 or 6 coaches in my life, depending on what my what I was looking for at the time. You know, so somebody like Cheryl was one of the first, Cheryl Richardson, she doesn't coach anymore. She was one of the first presidents of the Coach Federation. She's written books and she's, you know, you talk to them and you just feel like, well, do they understand me? Do they have a program that's cookie cutter? You know, I don't recommend cookie cutter programs. I'm not a cookie cutter coach, but there's coaches that do career coaching who are fantastic, who have a 90 days to a new career, for example. So you have to get clear about what you're looking for, and people will mostly give you an introductory session for at no cost. You see,
I on the other hand, like to go with a personal referral.
Well,
and if I'm being introduced to a coach, I will ask them for 3 clients that I can speak to directly that are in a similar type market. So I don't want to talk to someone who's in a lower end market. I want to talk to someone who's in a market that's like downtown Boston. And if the coach says they don't want me to give you their name, then my response back is, I'm doing this right now with someone. Would you please ask for permission? Mm-hmm. And this one person that came recommended will not give me any names and will not ask for permission. So I'm good with that, but I'm moving on because I want to know who the clients are. I want to get right down. What was it like 6 months into this? What was it like 6 years into this? How long have you been with this person? You know, what are the 3 things you like? What are the 3 things you hate? And the coach is never going to tell you that.
All right. So this is the point where we don't have that much more time. I need some coaching. Roberto needs some coaching. Okay. So it occurs to me, Roberto is a single agent, sole practitioner, and he's got a certain kind. And I would imagine his goals might be different from me, who's member of a team. Maybe heads a team, and we're seeing a lot of teams out there. So can you give some coaching maybe to a team leader who who's maybe got goals around his team performance, goals around being a better manager, and maybe some of the give some coaching to Roberto, who wants to be the best possible agent.
Okay. So I'll start with that. Then I'll let Jerry, the master coach, take it.
Because I think Roberto needs to be more like me. I think he needs to head a team, but that's for another day.
No, probably what, I mean, I don't know. We don't have enough time, but I would guess, because I have Roberto's in my office, that what Roberto needs is support, auxiliary support around him. Mm-hmm. You can't do your social media. You can't do your websites. Talented as you might be, you can't do all of that and then be you out in the marketplace. And that's the biggest thing that I have. This, the most success I have had is introducing the Robertos in my office to various people, companies that will do for them. Right now, we have a number of companies and one really good one. And Roberto, they'll come to Manhattan, who manages social media. One of the agents, Sarah, her social media following and her leads are coming from, I mean, it's off the hook.
Oh, I want that. If it's off the hook, I want that.
It's off the hook. It's really.
I want that for a client, yeah. That's
yeah,
great.
It's off the hook. This guy is really, his team is really, really good. So, I mean, the sole practitioner is usually, you know, a little bit more controlling. Right. And we can't, and, you know, no one can do it as well as they can. But at the end of the day, the sole practitioner, and I have a number, 50% of my office is teams, 50% are sole. I have 320 agents in my office. And as far as the team goes, it's the team lead spending enough time connecting with each member of the team. And if it's totally transactional, it'll never work. If
John,
that's in the,
John, are you listening?
Hearing.
John, I would start with, to interrupt Ken, John, I would start with this question. Where are you? Oh, hi. What keeps you up at night?
Four kids?
In addition? No. Yeah. But what keeps you up at night? Or what's pressing?
I feel a responsibility to the team. On the one hand, I think, you know what, one of my goals is certainly around building my team, making each member of my team most productive. On the other hand, I talked to a team leader in New York who leads a team of 20, does hundreds of millions of dollars in business every year for a decade. And he says, John, ultimately, most of your business is probably going to come from your own efforts. And he says, right. You cannot rely on your team, you know, to, you know, you're going to also have to rely on yourself as a salesman. So there's got to be a balance between John, the salesman, and John, the manager. And he's cautioning me to not expect too much out of the team, you know, that I also have to come back to what got me here in the first place, which is to be a good salesman. So there's a balance and I'm trying to find it.
What I'm finding with teams right now, and it's a bit frustrating, is that people, I interview so many people and I take them all, I invite them all in for a conversation because you just never know. And I find that people, if they open with, I want to be on a team, then they're weak and they don't believe in themselves. And I don't know. There's a culture, a subculture within a team that you need to really work at making them independent, strong, so that they can stand on their own. And I think that's what a good team lead does.
So Kent, are the team leaders, how many transactions are the top team leaders doing compared to, say, they're not just rainmakers bringing in business and then other people follow through? Or
Some of that. I mean, what we see happening right now is that a team lead will bring someone onto the listing for a certain percentage. And that's the person that runs to all the showings. And that's the person that does the inspection. And there's some value in that for sure, but you could also get a licensed assistant for a lot less money.
I realized a long time ago that I didn't like every aspect of this business equally. I don't like being a buyer's agent and a listing agent equally. I wanted to do more listing. And so I needed a team to pick up the buying. I don't want to necessarily show properties. So I need people to help me show properties. If I don't want to do social media, maybe I need, you know, people on the team who will focus their energies on marketing. So I just decided I wanted to be a specialist.
So are you the rainmaker? You're the rainmaker.
I want to be the rainmaker.
But that's the hardest. That's the best, most lucrative position. It's also the hardest for people who don't have that capability. I mean, I know that from working with a ton of, even in the law field, you know, the rainmakers aren't necessarily doing the day-to-day stuff. But if you're running the team, you also have to learn how to coach and train the team members or figure out how they can get good.
But there's also a little bit of a differentiation in that, like a lot of the things that John's talking about are the duties of a broker, all right? At the same time, John is extremely successful at what he does, but John, more of what John does is actually run a business. Not to say that a broker is not running a business, but he's not dealing with the widgets. He's explaining how the widgets should be made. He's like, you're doing that part, you're doing that, you're packaging the widgets, you're buffing them, you're, you know, designing them. He's running it, whereas for me, I'm doing every single one of those things. So John's kind of allocating away the brokerage part of it in some ways, the way I perceive it. Not completely, but he's more of a business owner. Mm-hmm. Running a business than doing the business.
But if those people are hourly paid or are they paid through a commission, I think you need to look at your expense structure so that you can say, how much of this can I allocate out to an hourly paid person to bring on my team? And that's what I've done with a number of teams over the years. Is that we brought in hourly paid workers. And Roberto, I'd say the same goes for you. You don't need another team. You don't need someone working beside you unless you have so much business.
That's fair. My coach has said the first hire you make as a successful agent is for an hourly paid assistant. And it's the best money you'll ever spend. Right. And whether you're Roberto or you're a team like me, right. He said it's true in both cases. But I know that, you know, I said it on the call this morning. I said, you know, we are in a tough market with not enough inventory. And my boss in New York asked me this morning, what are you doing to grow your business? He asked me and everybody else. And I said, you know, I can't just, I have to work either more efficiently. Mm-hmm. Or I told him I have to expand my sphere of influence geographically. Mm-hmm. And he said, I like that. That's good. You know, that's what we need to do. Now, easier said than done, you know, to not only be great within a 3-mile radius of where I'm sitting, but maybe a 5-mile radius. That's like telling Roberto, you have to be expert not only in Manhattan, but also take on Brooklyn in order to double your business this year. It's hard to do, to be expert in Manhattan and Brooklyn, let's say.
If I was your boss, I'd be saying to you, we need to work more efficiently. We need to make sure that the machine is working well. And until then, you can't expand.
Yeah.
And if you don't have the infrastructure and the support, doubling your business is going to be like a car crash.
You know the term opportunity costs, right? So every time that you're spending posting on social media or, you know, checking to see whatever, getting back to a client with an answer to something that your assistant could be doing, you could be out there schmoozing with somebody, getting more business, going through more doors, you know, or training your, I'm going to steal that expression because I love it. Or you could be training your team members how to get more effective in whatever they're doing. So, you know, it's hard to give up control. It's really hard when you're professional.
Can we talk more about that, giving up control? Because when I talk to successful agents like Roberto, and I say, what's the single reason you don't hire an admin and offload all the things that you don't have to be doing? And I'm just picking on Roberto, but I've seen this for the last 20 years. a lot of these agents admit right off the bat, they're like, my clients expect to talk to me, and I find it difficult to give up control to an assistant.
But if you introduce, if you're doing a listing and you say, I have a team of people and they're expert in blah, blah, blah. And like when you hire an orthopedic surgeon, you don't expect the orthopedic surgeon to book your appointment and clean the you know, surgical suite and whatever, you know, that this person does what they're best in. And this is what I'm best in. I have people who help with a, you know, who do the showings or do the whatever staging and whatever. And if problems come, my job is the job of the rainmaker should be to get listings, to negotiate the deal and to solve problems. I mean, major problems like the deal's falling apart or, you know, there's houses on fire, not like whatever, you know, like there's a problem with the sink and we need to get a plumber. You know, the only way to grow is to delegate, is to have support and do the things that you're best at, because you're probably not as good as social media as the person that Ken has, who does it personally. No offense, but you know,
my Instagram page?
I thought it was really good, but I'm just using that as an example. You know,
no,
I have a graphic designer, I have a web designer, I have a tech person, you know, I'm a solo person, but I can't do all that stuff myself. I have an accountant, you know, you need people. And there are people who are better at a lot of the things that you've been doing. And so you're giving them an opportunity to grow, and you can pay them a lot less money. If your time is worth $400 an hour, $200 an hour, and you're at an inspection where you shouldn't be or something. I don't know. Maybe that's not a good example, but you really need to learn to delegate. And that's your growing edge, John. If you want to, and Roberto, if you really want to grow your business, double your income in the next couple of years, then you have to leverage your time.
We've got 2 minutes left to go. I want to make sure I give you guys enough time to close on a strong note. But I'm going to tell you that we've, after what, peaking in America, we peaked, I think, in 2022 with the highest number of realtors, more realtors than we have listings in America. And now it's on the decline. People are getting out of the business. They're disappointed. They're bummed out. Let's have some forward-looking statements on what's your advice for 2024 in a challenging market that's getting more challenging all the time?
I'll take 30 seconds. You have to do the work. If you do not do the work, you can't expect results. And everyone thinks it's business is easy. It's the easiest business to get into, the hardest business to stay with.
Yeah. You just have to keep on trucking, because people jumped in when it looked easy, and you need a strong foundation. And the strongest foundation for a real estate agent is their sphere of influence and their skills and the support that they can get from their manager and their company. And if you don't have systems in place and procedures, then you don't have a strong foundation. So I say spend the year growing your sphere and getting your foundation, and go through more doors.
More doors.
And the losers are going to drop out because they're lazy and they don't want to do it.
Absolutely right.
So I think it's going to be a great year.
I think it's great advice.
Give me your goal for this year. How are you going to live the life you love?
I'm going to hire one person.
Yay!
What's that person going to do? What do you think?
It's going to be like a junior. It's going to be like a licensed admin of some sort who can do showings, but can do all of my secondary stuff.
By when are you going to do this?
2 months.
First quarter. There we go.
First quarter. There we go. Ken,
will you let us know?
Yeah.
I will let you know.
We'll do a follow-up, right?
Well, look how uncomfortable he is.
I am. I've been doing this 25 and a half years.
All right.
awful.
And my goals are around more communications with the people I know. I think I've spent a lot of time trying to meet new people, but I think in 2024, I'd really like to double down on my communications with the people I know. I've joined the New Canaan Men's Club. I'm going to just go without any great expectations for a particular amount of business and just meet these people and meet them where they are.
And also call everybody on your sphere. Send birthday cards. You know, send gifts for the whatever holiday, Valentine's Day, or send them seeds like, you know, forget-me-nots, or do stuff. Invite people to lunch. Have a dinner for people that moved to New Canaan in the last 5 years, all your clients, whatever.
Jerry just sent me a gift. Thank you, Jerry. I just opened it right before the call.
So I want to thank you both, Ken. Thank you, Ken Tutengian and Jerry Udelson.
Udelson, but that's okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
It's been a
great show.
Fabulous.
Great.
And,
really great.
I hope to see you again, and we'll let you know how we did on our goals.
Right.
We're going to check in.
Let's do a follow-up in 6 months, John.
You got it.
Okay.
That's good.
Thanks,
everybody. That's where we can renegotiate, Ken?
Does he renegotiate?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.